You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And it's a question that all book lovers have probably found themselves asking at one point or another. Why do I read? And with a million different things competing for our attention these days, it's probably a question that gets asked more and more often.
Our next guest set out to answer that question for herself and to explore what it is about literature that keeps book lovers coming back for more. And of course, we want to hear the reasons you read, so give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Wendy Lesser joins us now. She's the founder and editor of the Three Penny Review. Her new book is Why I Read, The Serious Pleasure of Books. Wendy, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we're in an age where we've got entertainment options all over the place, Netflix, social networks, TV shows whenever we want them, all the rest, the smartphones. Why books?
Good question. And I'm particularly pleased with the way you set it up in your intro, which is why I read, and then asking the listeners to say why they read, because the answer is different for all of us.
Hmm.
And so in my case, it has to do with that I've been a lifelong reader and I'm essentially an addict to reading. I can't go through a day or two without reading, and the better the work I'm reading, the happier I am. So it's necessary to my happiness, I would say. But part of the point of the book, and the reason it has serious pleasure in the subtitle, is that it's not exactly the same kind of happiness that comes from eating a good piece of chocolate or, you know, having a nice glass of wine. It's a slightly more complex and long-term pleasure that I get from reading.
Well, let's break that down. What is different? What is unique about the pleasure we get from reading as opposed to the zillion other pleasure options out there?
Well, I think especially compared to the ones you brought up, that is smartphone, internet, interactivity, the thing about reading a book, especially an inert book like a printed book or maybe a Kindle book where you can't get on the internet with it, is that you are stuck with the book and with yourself. And that is a good thing. And you can have a feeling of community with all the other people who have ever read the book, with the characters in the book, with the author whose voice is speaking to you in the book. But you also simultaneously and paradoxically have a sense of yourself alone within this community. It's kind of a great combination of solitude and joining with something else.
Oh, I love that. And you write about the joy of discovery, and maybe I added the word exploration when we read. Talk mm-hmm. about that a little, please.
Well, I end the book with a list of 100 books to read for pleasure. And the idea is that each single book is like the end of a string that you can pull, and all the rest of the related ones come out. So first of all the others by the same author. You won't necessarily love all the books by an author equally. I never do. I mean, I have preferences among them. But once you find somebody whose work you love, you can just keep mining that mine for ages and finish their work. And then the other kind of exploration is through time and space. I mean, there are lots of places I've never been to in reality that I have only been to in books, like the Bombay of Rohinton Mysteries 20th century novels, or the Paris of everybody's 19th century novels, from Balzac through Flaubert, you know, to Zola. That it's a Paris I can't go to because it doesn't exist anymore, but I can get there through novels.
I love that sense of place. You also have a chapter on character and plot, and your original plan, I gather, was to have two separate chapters. You couldn't break them up, though. Why not?
That's very insightful of you to have noticed that. Since it's just kind of a throwaway line. Well, I did actually have two separate chapters, character and plot, but I had a sentence saying, oh, they are linked at the hip. You know, I can't really separate them this way, but I'm going to. And then a friend of mine read a late draft of this book, one that I thought was finished. And he said, well, this part and that part I like a lot, but this other part I find confusing. And I realized that all the parts he liked a lot were about both character and plot and their interrelation, and all the parts he found confusing were about this other thing that I had stuck into both those chapters, which was the author's relationship to the character, or the author's relationship to us, the reader, or somebody living relationship to somebody dead and off stage. So I took all those other things out. I just kind of airlifted them from the two chapters and made them into another chapter called The Space Between, and that left the two character and plot chapters ready to be crushed together, which they did quite nicely.
Well, it got me to thinking. I can think about characters I've loved in a book, but it isn't just that there's this interesting description of a character and that grabs your attention. And I can think of plots that I've loved in book, but it seems like when things really are working, it's you're watching how the interesting character you're connected to relates to these evolving conditions.
Well, exactly. And I think that the most interesting in the sense of unexpected example that I came across was Henry James, because we always think of him as a great psychological novelist and, you know, the plumber of the depths of character. But he himself says that character can only be revealed through action, through the things that people do. And if you look closely at his books, that's just right. I mean, even if the thing they're doing is sitting in a chair figuring out what they're going to do next, it's watching the character follow her life through and take the next step and figure out who she is that reveals her to us and to herself.
Something that really struck me that you mentioned is the feeling of loss when we finish a book and leave the world behind. And I remember the first time I felt like that. I don't remember the age, but I read the I, Claudius books by Robert Graves. And I just remember sitting there when I was done with the last page of the second book, feeling kind of sad. Like, I'm done with this world. I won't get to talk to Claudius anymore. What are some books that left you with that sense of loss when you were done with them?
Well, the first I can remember, and this is going to sound ridiculous that an 11 or 12-year-old should have been reading Don Quixote, but I was reading Don Quixote at that age, and I got to the end of it, and it's, you know, two long volumes, much of which an 11 or 12-year-old couldn't possibly understand. But anyway, I got enough to feel as if I really knew this crazy knight, and I was very attached to him. And when that ended, which it does with his death, I was really devastated. And then, so that's the longest ago one I can remember. And one of the most recent ones I can remember is reaching the end of Wolf Hall, that Hilary Mantel novel, and feeling, oh, no, no more, I'm out of this. But then she wrote a sequel. So you never know if you're completely ejected or not.
We're talking with Wendy Lesser about the passion and pleasures of reading. She has a new book out on the topic, Why I Read. And we want to hear from you. What's your answer to that question? Why do you read? What do you personally get out of it? What is unique about the pleasure of reading a book? Or if you're not a reader, you haven't embraced books in this way, why not? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org.
We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment. But first, here's a look at the latest headlines with Kristen Durst of the WPR News Department. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking with Wendy Lesser, author of Why I Read. And if you'd like to share your reasons for reading, why do you read? Why do you love a good book? Give us a call. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post and share your reading suggestions on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Debbie with us in Knife River, Minnesota. Debbie, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. One of the quotes that I like comes from the movie Shadowlands, where C.S. Lewis apparently says, "We read to know we are not alone." And I like that. It struck a chord with me.
I think that's right. Exactly true. And that's true even if it's a very isolated type of personality that's writing the poem, story, play, memoir, whatever. I mean, think of Emily Dickinson, who barely published in her lifetime and is always a voice very much by herself on the page. And yet when we read her, we are with her. We're not alone. We're together.
You talk a lot about that connection with us and the author, with us and the characters, with us and those who have read the book before. But what about actually literally sharing the book with others? What do you think of getting together either in book clubs or in informal discussions about the books? Does that add to the reading experience?
I tend not to do that so much just because I have at least one and probably two or three very good friends with whom I have an informal lifetime book club. In other words, whenever we run across a new book, we tell each other about it, we call each other up on the phone and have lengthy discussions, or if we're in the same city, we talk in person. So I haven't ever had the need for a regular book club that meets formally, but I did tell my publishers that I thought this book was like a book club in a box, and they said, not a box, hard covers, you know, but I mean, it is a book club, sort of, because there you are chatting away with me. I mean, I'm doing most of the chatting, but the person on the other side is responding, and then able to think of the books they've read or add books they've read to the pool and draw from the book. So I am completely in favor of the idea of book clubs and was in some ways sort of imitating one when I wrote this book.
Debbie, thanks for the call and thanks for sharing that quote. We'll go back to our phones now at 800-642-1234. We've got Gary with us in South Milwaukee. Gary, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Why do you read?
I just like it because there's really nothing on TV nowadays. And I mean, if it would be better if they had some original ideas. But I don't know. There's just so many books, and you can get entertained through a book. I mean, my wife complains because I read some books 12 times, and you always pick up something new in a novel. And I don't know. It's just a great form of entertainment. And like in the winter of Wisconsin, what better way to curl up with a book and just, you know, read and go to bed, you know?
Gary, thanks a lot. And yes,
totally
a lot
agree.
Of reading has been done in this cold winter.
And about the rereading, I think that's very important. And sometimes I even reread mysteries. You would think I wouldn't need to, but if I haven't read, you know, one of my favorite mysteries for 20 or 30 years, I almost forget the plot. So
you forgot who done
it again. Yeah.
And does the reading, well, you kind of answered this a little, does it have to be elevated literature, however we want to define it? Or is that serious pleasure still there in maybe a light genre read?
Well, I don't like, frankly, to make distinctions between genres because I think they're great books in all genres. So some of the hundreds in the 100 that I list at the end are mysteries, and some are nonfiction sort of journalistic reportage. In other words, there are great books in every category, including science fiction and mystery and things that people often disdain. So I believe in treating those books as seriously as any others and as enjoyably as any others.
Thanks for the call, Gary. We go to another Gary in Eveleth. That's new to me, Minnesota. Gary, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Eveleth is north of Duluth on Highway 53.
Oh, way up there. Okay. Well, thanks for calling. What's why do you read?
Well, I remember a quote, I don't remember who it was by, that said, reading, we read either to take us away from the world or to bring us back to the world. When I was younger, I read to take me away from a world that wasn't much fun. But now that I'm older, I read to bring myself back to the world.
Wow.
And one of the main books, or one of my favorite books, is a book by Ann Wilson Schaaf titled When Society Becomes an Addict, which talks about the prevalence of addictive behaviors in our society and how supportive people are of those kinds of addictive behaviors.
All right. Thanks, Gary, for the suggestion and for that quote. I love that idea you mentioned earlier on, Wendy, that we all have different reasons for reading. His reason for reading evolved over the course of his life.
Yes, I think that's quite common, and I also appear to have stolen that quote.
Uh-oh.
Because I mean, I didn't steal it exactly, but somewhere in my book I say something like, nothing takes you out of yourself like a good book, and nothing makes you more aware of being in connection with, you know, the world that you inhabit or something. I mean, I didn't put it as well as that person he was quoting did, but I utterly believe in the idea.
And those are both valid reasons. Some people use the word escapist sometimes, more generally about science fiction, which I read a lot, fantasy literature. Is there anything wrong with getting away from the world, escaping, whether it's a light read or a heavy read?
I think, you know, Gary Steingart said recently that if a book doesn't have distress, tragedy, and irritation in it, he mistrusts it. There's something wrong with it. And I kind of agree with him on that front. That is, escapism that just feeds you what you want, that makes you feel, you know, overstuffed with the sense of how wonderful you are and life is all going well and everything is perfect, that kind of escapism I frankly disapprove of. Now, nobody should care if I disapprove of things. They should go and read the books they want. But I think there's plenty of science fiction, for instance, that is not that kind of escapism, that is about some parallel world that has lots of problems that are either ones we are going to develop or have already developed, and that the plot works out those problems in very interesting ways. So you're never fully escaping from yourself or the world you inhabit in that kind of fiction. And I think the slight amount of escapism that you're allowed by any kind of fiction allows you in some ways to contemplate the problems more fully. You know, the danger of being exposed to them is removed, and you're able to think more carefully about them.
We'll have Gary Steingart on this show next week, Thursday, I want to say, but check the calendar as that gets closer.
Oh, good. I love that new book of his, Little Failure.
That's what we're going to be talking about. That's great. We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Maddie with us in Milwaukee. Maddie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. What do you think about reading?
Well, I've been a lifelong reader. Started reading James Thurber when I was 4 years old. But My favorite author, probably of all time, is P.G. Wodehouse, because I can read the stories of Jeeves over and over and over again, and it's great when you have a bad day and you can just flip open a, you know, 10-page stories about Jeeves and laugh and just find yourself laughing out loud when you're reading. It's amazing.
Maddie, you just hit a lot of my literary childhood there. I remember one of my first kid papers on a book was on James Thurber, and then P.G. Wodehouse, I think I wrote a little biography for him in 8th or 9th grade or something like that in school.
Yeah, I loved Thurber too. I remember I wrote a letter to his widow at one point saying, could we put on a play of one of his stories in my school? I wanted to turn it into a play. And she wrote back and said, yes, as long as you don't charge money.
And so you did the play.
I don't remember. I just remember writing the letter.
Okay.
And the thrill of getting it back. And I completely agree about writing that makes you laugh, you know, of which Gary Steingart is some. But, I mean, Mark Twain is another I would add to that list, someone that can make me laugh out loud.
Well, I don't want to let the time get away from us, Wendy, without getting some of the recommendations. You listed, you mentioned 100 books at the end of your book. Can you give us a few that maybe are new to you or that you're hankering to reread in the near future?
Well, I'm always hankering to reread. and in fact, I wrote a whole other book about rereading over a decade ago. But in this case, none of them, of course, were new to me. I felt I had to have read them all in order to recommend them to people. But ones that were published relatively recently were, for instance, Roberto Bolaño's Distant Star. That was published within the last 10 years. He only died within the last 10 years. The Hilary Mantel novel, Beyond Black. I didn't list her Henry VIII's novels just because they're so popular now. Everyone knows about them, but I did list Beyond Black, which is an earlier one of hers. The Master by Colm Tóibín, who's a wonderful writer, alive now, working still. And The Master is his novel about Henry James. So, of course, I loved it since I love Henry James. And there were a couple of books that are surprising just because they don't necessarily seem like the kind of thing you would find in a list of recommended literature, like Alexander Herzen's My Past and Thoughts, this giant 19th century work of essentially self-contemplation and political contemplation. Or, I don't know what other one is that weird, but maybe Jean Stafford's The Mountain Lion. Very few people have heard of Jean Stafford anymore, and that was a great novel of hers that was reissued by New York Review Classics.
I read some things on a tablet. I mostly do physical books. You wrap up your book with a chapter, or towards the end of your book, with a chapter on the value of the physical book itself. You mentioned earlier that there isn't a button you can push to do something else. Is there more to the value of holding a book and turning the pages?
Well, for me, there is, because I was raised with physical books. And so just as a poet I remember once said, he had to write with a pencil in his hand, not a typewriter or anything like that, because he needed to recapture the feeling of first drawing letters when he was a child, and that gave rise to his poetry. So for me, reading in some way always recapitulates that completely immersed pleasure of childhood. And to do that, I have to be doing it with the same kind of object that I had as a child, that is a printed book, because tablets and Kindles and all those were not invented when I was a child. I read lots of mysteries on my iPad. It's a great way to read mysteries, that flick of the finger on the screen and then the next page appears. And I can enjoy reading, but I can't remember what I read as well if it's not a printed page. I just have a better physical relationship with the fixed letters on a fixed page. It's just me.
Well, no, that makes sense, though. You don't have just the visual sense, but the tactile, and I'm a big fan of musty old used bookstores, even though they make me sneeze, because there's something about the smell that adds to the value of the physical book.
I think so, too. Absolutely. And the paper quality in the olden days was better as well, so you can feel the paper. You can't feel the print on it necessarily, but the paper itself, if it's a very high quality.
I've been thinking a lot lately about time as kind of a precious resource, and a lot of time gets drawn away where I think all of a sudden I haven't sat down and read for even a half an hour in days. How long can you go before you start feeling edgy without making that serious reading time?
Well, you know, other people seem to have lives that are more demanding than mine because I work for myself or for a magazine that I run. I'm pretty much able to dictate my own schedule. So there are very few days, very few, that I don't sit down at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and read for an hour or two before dinner. I just, I have a life that allows me to do that, and I'm very grateful that I have that life. If I missed a day, I would feel it the next day. It's like the way some people are with exercise. I just would feel like I had been deprived of something if I missed my regular late afternoon reading time.
Wendy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Wendy Lesser is the author of Why I Read the Serious Pleasure of Books, and you can keep the conversation going on our Facebook page, Central Time on WPR. What are you reading? Why do you read?